You're listening to the Chances Report on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Dave Edwards, joined in the studio by Mike Lovell, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Welcome back to the program, sir.
Well, thanks, Dave.
So in the last few weeks, there's been a lot of attention being focused on the budgeting process of the University of Wisconsin system institutions and a reported $1 billion cash balance. I know you have reacted to that. So I guess, you know, I should just ask, what is the status of the cash balance or so-called surplus in at the system level, but also on your campus?
Well, I think, you know, I can specifically talk about UWM and our cash balances. And first of all, the idea that we are calling cash balances a surplus is really not true. At UWM, you know, at the snapshot of July 1st of every year, certainly we have money that we carry forward from the previous year. But in our case, it was reported that we had $92 million in a surplus. Well, that's really our cash forward money until July 1st of last year. And most of that money, almost all of it, is committed to projects. And so it's encumbered money. And so the money, as we carry it forward, is set aside for very important projects we've strategically decide to invest in going forward. And 72 of those $92 million specifically have been set aside for our new capital projects as part of the Milwaukee Initiative, where the state gave us $240 million to build new buildings across the city, public health, School of Freshwater Science, the Kenwood IRC, out of Innovation Campus, built out of Columbia St. Mary's, some very, very big capital projects, but they didn't give any funds to either operate those buildings or hire new faculty in the two new schools we just started. So our commitment to the state was that we would provide the funds for those new capital projects.
And so where did those funds come from then?
Well, those funds come from our operating budget, and okay, the biggest source of income for our university today is tuition. So obviously, as the state asks us to invest our funds into those projects, the logical source of a good portion of those is going to be, you know, to tuition our students, because guess what? The GPR funds we get from the state to operate the university have gone down to below 20% at 19% of our operating budget. So what's obviously happened, the reason why you see tuition increase is because the state's portion is going down. We still need to operate, so the student and their families have to pay more. And so then when we invest in projects, guess what? These programs are for the students, better opportunities for them, you know, going forward, you know, both in terms of their classes, the labs that they're going to be in, the opportunities to find jobs, you know, we're going to use their money to invest in these programs ultimately for their future.
Mm-hmm. So I want to back up just a little bit. You said GPR. I want to say that's general purpose revenue.
Yes.
That's the basic money that the university gets from the state. You're talking about projects to build these new buildings, these new facilities were approved by the regents,
yes,
correct?
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like just something you came up with that went through an approval process. And then what did you mean when you said that they gave you, you know, you have the money for the buildings, but now you have to, what, operate the buildings?
Sure. You know, anyone who, you know, even in your own home, you know, you can live in your house, but you still have expenses to heat your house, the electricity, all the things that you need to do. So operating these buildings, you know, costs quite a bit of money. When you're talking about Columbia St. Mary's Hospital, for example, it's 828,000 square feet. It's 11 different buildings. It costs $3 million a year just to keep the lights on and heat the place. You know, we didn't get new money, you know, to do that. In addition, we have two new schools and colleges that the state, you know, asked us to create, but we didn't get money for new faculty for those schools or colleges. So we've had to use our funds and invest those strategically into those schools and colleges to hire the faculty with the idea that we're going to get new students are going to enroll in those programs and they're going to grow and they'll pay for themselves over time.
Mm-hmm. You released to the campus community, and I think it was picked up in the local press, a series of graphs and charts which showed how the money flows in and how it flows out and how, mm-hmm, the line, you know, drops as a lot of these projects come online. And that's fairly significant, right? Because these kind of carryovers don't stay at the same level,
no,
going forward.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand these are one-time money. These are not base budget money that we have in our budgets. And so as when we spend them out, they're not being replenished in any way. And so one of the things that is important for us to understand is that because of the strategic investments we're making into these new buildings and the new faculty in these areas, that our cash balances are going to go down over the next 5 years. You know, mm-hmm, they're 13% now of our total revenues. They're going to go down to 4% if we don't generate new revenues, which we believe we are, that mm-hmm. we'll again replenish these so we can invest in new things going forward. It's just the way to operate. And the state is asking us to be acting more like a business. We believe we are. We believe we're being aggressive and ambitious in doing so. And I feel like, you know, in some respects, we're being criticized for doing exactly what the state has asked us to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, these numbers, this whole issue kind of bubbled up because of the Legislative Fiscal Bureau's report. They were asked to look at the cash position of the University of Wisconsin system. You know, my belief, you know, I'm maybe right or wrong, that the auditors from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau know how to read balance statements, they know how to ask questions, and they know how to write a report. Why did their report not reflect the kinds of things you're talking about here?
Well, I think that they're, first of all, the Legislative Audit Bureau puts out a report every year about all the balances in the system and for all the institutions in the system. So the numbers that came out have been coming out for you can find them online for the last 10 years. So I'm a little surprised that people were so startled by the numbers because, you know, the balances throughout the system really haven't changed significantly over the last 10 years. We did have a little bump last year. I'm not sure exactly why that was. But, you know, certainly as they would dig into these things, you know, they don't really report institution per institution at that level. They certainly could, but they just kind of aggregate our funds in the different pots that we have, you know, and report them out for each institution and then overall for the system in general.
Mm-hmm. So when the auditors, presumably they had to talk to people. I mean, they just didn't rely on the numbers that system filed. I mean, did they come to you? Did they come to your budget officer and say, so why are you carrying this balance?
No, we never heard any questions like that. And it's important to point out, you know, one of the reasons why I believe that there has not been a lot of discussion about this, you know, in the past is that the standard from NACUBO, which is the National Association of College University Business Officers, suggests the best practice for your carry-forward balances is 40%. And we're at 13%, you know. And so, you know, we're below, well below the national averages or what is recommended as a best practice. And so we never thought this would be a big issue, because at least at our campus level.
Mm-hmm. So as you guys were preparing your budgets going forward, I mean, you never saw this as being something that would make big headlines now.
No, I thought, you know, it's, especially because the state asked us to do this. You know, that's the thing that's frustrating, is that the state knew that, you know, we had these buildings and they didn't want them to sit empty. So they mm-hmm. came to us and said, listen, we need you to contribute to this. And they knew that we had the cash forward balances to do it. That's why we have cash forward balances, to invest in things that are going to help us grow.
Mm-hmm. So I just have to just want to get you be a little specific. When you said the state didn't want us to keep those buildings empty, when you're saying the state, who are you referring to?
Well, I believe it's the regents.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, and actually, ultimately, you know, the governor and legislator, they wouldn't want us to build new buildings that the states invest in and not have operate them and have, you know, faculty and students in them.
Mm-hmm. So you have articulated, I think, some, you know, good reasons as to why your cash forward balances are what they are. But a lot of other people are weighing in. Assembly Speaker Voss was quoted as saying, and I'll read his quote, "I guess when you're discovered with a significant stash of money, it's easy to talk about things that have always been on your wish list." It sounds like this isn't a wish list.
No, this is a commitment that we made to the state. And be honest with you, Dave, I would like to shine a big spotlight on what we're doing because I'm very proud of it. And I think we're being very good stewards with the state's resources.
Mm-hmm. So what's the motive behind all of this?
I can't really answer that. I'm not sure. You know, I think that, again, I think that these numbers, I can understand the fact that these are large sums of money. You know, we talk about these balances, you know, whether it's $1 billion or $600 million or $400 million, depending on, you know, what you're looking at exactly. There's some debate there. That's a lot of money. But when you think about the number of institutions within the system, I mean, there's 13 four-year colleges, 13 two-year colleges, and a UW System Central Office. That's 27 different organizations that mm-hmm. this money is spread through. And guess what? Even an organization, it's not all held centrally. There's a lot of this money carry forwards in schools and balances, and probably even in your own shop here at mm-hmm. UWM, you have carry forward balances each
sure.
year. And that aggregate gets caught up in our aggregate number. But certainly there's not one place in any one of the organizations where a large pot of money like this sits.
Sure. Well, and I'll say that for WUWM, our cash forward is primarily has a lot to do with salary commitments, which we have made commitments for leasing space and those kinds of things. And as you said it before, I mean that happens in every kind of business and any organization.
But to call that cash balance that you have at UWM a surplus, it's like having someone looking at their checking account on the second day of the month and they have a balance and saying, that's your surplus. That's the money you have, not knowing they still have a house payment, a car payment, and the utilities. You know, it's just an unfair way to look at things.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing that's come up now as a result of this discussion is whether or not there should be a tuition freeze for UW system. If there is a tuition freeze, what happens? I mean, how do you operate your campus? Do you have to dip into some of these funds that you've committed otherwise?
Well, I think ultimately, the things that get most impacted if we do have a tuition freeze is, you know, there's several other very important things on our campus that we need funds for that having less income because the tuition will hurt. The first is the proactive efforts we are doing to retain our best and brightest faculty who are being recruited in other places. You know, again, we haven't had a raise in 6 years. Our faculty pay more for benefits, and they're really ripe for being recruited away. And we are constantly, it's not a week that goes by that we're not looking at trying to make a counteroffer or trying to keep somebody here. And the less funds that we have, the harder it's going to be to find the resources to keep those people. We also, as you know, demographics are going down, you know, in the state, you know, in terms of the student population. And it's, you know, our enrollment's gone down the last 2 years. That has a negative effect on our bottom line. So we also want to invest in really recruiting and retention efforts, you know, new ones, so that we can actually get more both international and out-of-state students, and then the students that come to us that have programs to help retain them so they're more successful. You know, less revenue means we'll be able to invest less in those things. The way that we're working with industry, we're very proud of some of our partnerships. And we've talked before about the Johnson Controls partnerships, GE Healthcare, the Water Council, Rockwell Automation. You know, we're an integral part of the efforts Milwaukee is making to be more economically viable and to thrive. And having less funds for us to put into those programs, you know, really, it's going to have a negative impact not just on the students, faculty of our campus, but ultimately on the vitality of the region and the state. And finally, you know, there's other things we need to do. You know, we've talked before about how higher ed is changing, and we want to be relevant in terms of what's going on with this massive online courses, the way we can offer degrees more online. But we need to invest in technology to do that, to prepare ourselves, you know, for the 750,000 people in the state that don't have some college education but not a degree. You know, it takes technology to prepare for that. You know, we're not going to have the funds or as much funds to invest in that technology to make the impact we think we could make.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Chancellor's Report on WUWM. He is Mike Lovell, the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I'm Dave Edwards. One of the other things I wanted to talk about, in addition to now a discussion of a tuition freeze, is this all comes up at a time, and we've been talking about it on previous programs, where the regions have been seeking more independence to operate the university system. And you have articulated, just as many of the regions, why that made sense. And a number of lawmakers seemed to be gaining traction.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that discussion now gets on the back burner as people try to focus on this?
Unfortunately, and you know, the hard part about it is, Dave, is that we all understand that the amount that the state is going to invest into higher ed, you know, it's been on a negative trend for 25 years. And I don't see any change in that, because things like healthcare, the prison system, are all, you know, they're costing more money each year. And so the pie is only so big. And so higher ed is getting squeezed down. With that in mind, you know, myself and, you know, other chancellors, you know, across the state recognize that we need to diversify our revenue streams. And to do that, you need to have flexibility. And so I need to be able to be innovative and entrepreneurial as a campus to take advantage of opportunities that I see out there. And not having those flexibilities really hamper our efforts to take advantage of opportunities we see to be more self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm. So I imagine you're hoping that, you know, that people begin to listen to some of these explanations, so you don't regress on some of the programs and some of the ideas that you and presumably other chancellors have been advocating for.
Yeah, and I agree 100%. And the flex degree is a perfect example. You know, the flex degree is going to take investments by the campuses to be able to see the payback later on when we get students enrolled. Well, if we don't have the flexibility and the funds to do that, it may never get off the ground.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, the timing for this is you know, ripe for speculation too, because of the being we're in the budget cycle right now, and maybe even by the time this broadcast airs, there will be new developments and new changes along the way.
And I just want to close out by saying, you know, in my career, you know, the faculty and staff on our campus are the most resourceful people I've ever worked with. They do more with this the under difficult fiscal constraints, you know, than I think anyone I've ever met. And so I just think that they are being great stewards of the state's funds. And I really hope that this doesn't somehow, you know, really continue to negatively impact, you know, their future and particularly what we can offer the students of the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll be talking about this issue for some time to for some time to come. But you said something a little while ago that I guess I want to come back to. Part of the message that you have been getting from the regents and presumably from the legislature was that universities had to be operating more like a business, be more entrepreneurial. And in fact, a number of things have been done in this area. I mean, we've been talking about it, and I'm sure there have been some other new developments in this area. Where UWM, for example, I think has really undertaken a huge entrepreneurial spirit.
Mm-hmm. And exactly, because we recognize that if the region and the state is going to be successful, the genesis of entrepreneurship and innovation, a good portion of it happens at the university. If you look across the country, any area of the country that's prospering, there's a research university that's helping drive that innovation. And we look at as our role, you know, certainly Milwaukee's big is the biggest institution, the only research intensive institution, that is our role. So I've and the faculty and staff on our campus have really put a concerted effort into trying to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, the governor touted the phrase, the state is open for business. There was also an open for enterprise media event. Again, I think this kind of parallels what you've been talking here. And you were a participant in one of the big meetings on
this. Yeah, so this really, the genesis of this was actually a trip that I made with Shell Lubar to Babson College, which is one of the top. They've been ranked first in New Westerners Report in entrepreneurship education for 19 straight years. And we went up there to find out, you know, what they were doing. And we've had several things that have come out from the university. I sent some faculty up there for a workshop to learn the Babson model. The Startup Challenge, which we've talked about before, you know, emerged from that, from the faculty that went there. The other piece that emerged from the trip to Babson was the meeting of Dan Eisenberg. And what Dan Eisenberg does is he develops entrepreneurial ecosystems in cities around the world. And so after the visit up there, I invited him to come talk to the Greater Milwaukee Committee at one of their monthly meetings. And he came and talked about his model, how he developed, you know, these ecosystems in all, you know, really all around the world. And he became very intrigued about Milwaukee and saw a real potential for us to become an innovative city and develop this ecosystem. And as it turned out, when he was approached by American Express, he'd never done a city in the U.S. He'd done 27 cities around the world, beat these ecosystems. He was American Express to do one in the United States, and he chose Milwaukee.
Hmm.
And it was really exciting for him to want to come to Milwaukee and to do this. And so this, you know, this really is called a Scale Up Milwaukee, this program to develop this ecosystem got kicked off this month. You know, there's meetings held across the city. We held a meeting at UWM with really the stakeholders, which include big companies, startup companies, people from the universities, people from the nonprofits, to really create this system so we're all working together to really, you know, tap the potential of Milwaukee to be an innovation center. And so the event that we held was the kickoff, but it's going to be a six-month process in what we're calling phase one, where we determine, you know, the things that we should be doing to have the city working coherently with all, because there's a lot of good things happening all over the place, and if we all pulled all this together, we really can become a center of excellence for innovation and entrepreneurship here.
Mm-hmm. So thinking about what he has done with other cities and other models, I mean, what will success look like for Milwaukee?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, he points out that we should, for every 100,000 residents in the area, we should be looking at one startup a year for every 100,000 within the region, and that's ultimately where we want to get to for success. And he says you can give or take the number somewhere. Sometimes it's 150, sometimes it's 100, maybe 200 200,000 residents. But he said, if you think about it for Milwaukee and our size, you know, we should be looking, you know, at a significant number, you know, 20 to 30 startups a year. You know, I believe, you know, we're not even half that right now.
Mm-hmm. That's going to take some, it's going to take a lot of work because a lot of people view Milwaukee not as an entrepreneurial forward thinking, but as a community that is still struggling with a loss of manufacturing, which is really what defined this area for a long time. So it's good to say that. Well, mm-hmm. we could have six startups or whatever startups, but you gotta change the mindset too. Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, part of it is, you know, as the university's role is producing graduates that are more innovative and entrepreneurial. So when they go out, where they want to start their own company or they are in these organizations, because 90% of our students stay in the state, you know, that they're thinking this way, and it just changes the culture and the mindset as we infuse new talent into these companies.
Mm-hmm. Well, keep us informed on that. That's obviously very, very excited. In April, UWM awarded its second ever Chancellor's Innovation Award.
Yes. And this was we gave this out to Satya Nadella, who is a fabulous one of representative of UWM, is one of our graduates at Microsoft Corporation. He's been at Microsoft for 20 some years, and the innovative products that he has been responsible for, you know, he's a very humble guy, and we gave this lunch and he gave his talk. It was just amazing that the things that he had done, you know, anywhere from, you know, he was one who developed Excel to the different software platforms, you know, the NT platform, to, you know, just any major product. He was the new product, the Surf, he was responsible for, you know, that they just launched. So any of the major products that have come out or things have happened, innovations at Microsoft, he's been the one responsible for them. And it was really neat because when he gave his talk at the luncheon, he didn't really talk about his personal accomplishments, but one of the things that he mentioned that changed his life that really struck me was when he was at UWM, he was from India originally, grew up in India and came to graduate school here in the U.S. at UWM. And he worked in a program called Upward Bound, where he was tutoring high school students. And coming from India, a lot of the people around him weren't very well off, but he never had empathy for them. He never, but it wasn't until he came to Milwaukee into the Upward Bound program where he was tutoring students from the inner city and really became engaged in their success and cared, that he learned how important it is to make sure you're giving back to others. And he talked about how that changed his life and how he views things and how he's worked at Microsoft, always thought about ways he can make people's lives better, both people at Microsoft, but also the people, you know, throughout the world.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of cool when you think about it, UWM graduate, you know, being behind Excel and being on the cutting edge. I mean, that's kind of like it's a good role model.
Yes.
for the institution. Yeah. and students as well. There was a combined joint workshop between the Lubar School of Business and the College of Engineering and Applied Sciences on entrepreneurship and technology as well. We've got a good theme going here on entrepreneurship. Yeah. what's the common point between the two schools, and what was the purpose of this
workshop?
Well,
you know, again, we are trying to cut across the university and, you know, really become more innovative and entrepreneurial. And so one of the ideas between this joint workshop was really finding ways that the business school and the engineering school, and actually it wasn't just engineering, it was really, we invited people from across campus. We had people from health sciences. We had people from the hard sciences, even the social sciences were there to talk about ways as a campus we can become more innovative and entrepreneurial. And the specific focus of this meeting was we had somebody who had worked at IBM for 37 years and really helped with their innovation ecosystem talk about how universities can work with industry to help them be more innovative and entrepreneurial, both in terms of the graduates producing, but how we can help infuse technology and ideas into those organizations. And really going on some of the things we're trying to accomplish at UWM now. Again, we've talked before about the work we're doing with some of the biggest companies here like Johnson Controls and GE Healthcare.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is another change. You and I have talked on this program before about how, you know, fundraising is such an important part. And if you look back at universities 10, 20 years ago, the chancellor wasn't necessarily as involved in fundraising as I know you are now. But this is another thing, too, just involving two very different schools to come together around a topic like this. I mean, you never used to do that. Schools and colleges and campuses were pretty siloed organizations.
Yeah. And I think, you know, everyone recognizes that the best opportunities for success now in constrained fiscal times is through partnerships, and whether it be partnerships between schools and colleges on our campus or be with among institutions or, you know, public-private partnerships. It's really the way of the future, and I think all of us recognize that it's just the way of life now.
Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you about National Science Foundation participating with a UWM symposium and forum. What was that about?
Again, this is another example. You know, we have Professor Valley Reich, who is really a national leader in something called two-photon microscopy. And he started a company. He's been very innovative on our campus. His company is doing very well. We had a Partnership for Innovation grant from NSF, a large grant that I'm a co-PI with him, that brought together people from around the country that had specific interest in this two-photon microscopy. And but we're looking to commercialize their technology. How do we take what they were doing? This is a very, very, you know, hard science, basic science research that they're doing, but how do we commercialize it and what are the products we can produce? And so what the workshop did is talked about how we could take what scientists were doing at the universities, but then also brought in the industry. So the industry would talk about how they can pull that technology in, you know, to their organizations so that they would benefit as well. Because one of the things that's interesting is that most companies now understand that it's much more economical for them to actually have their next breakthroughs happen at the university than for them to invest all the resources themselves.
Yeah.
And so they can kind of pick, you know, the technology that they like that we're doing research on in, you know, campuses across the country and then bring them in-house. And so that's why you saw several companies were there and actually helping us sponsor the event.
Yeah. So I want to tie this all together with the conversation we even had at the front part of the program about the university's finances. So we've just talked about a number of innovative and very entrepreneurial things that UWM is involved in. And we talked earlier about the way people are viewing the balances, the cash balances that the university system has. Do you think that part of this is that somehow higher education, not just UW, needs to sort of re-educate America, our communities, about how universities have changed so that the discussion doesn't necessarily, or that there is even a connection that if there's an increase in tuition, the opportunities that students have. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yes.
Like, do people need to perceive higher education differently?
Yes. And I think there is a big disconnect right now for people to understand. I think that people don't understand the value that higher ed, you know, provides society. And they also understand that both at the federal and the state level, there are less resources going into higher ed. And the tuition increases people see are not because the universities are not being good stewards of the money that's been given to us. It's because the reality is we have to keep things operating and open. And again, you know, obviously if the tuition gets, you know, frozen this year, you know, we have to find a way to live with that. But think ultimately, you know, what it's going to mean is that we're going to have less opportunities, you know, for our students long term.
Mike Lovell is the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Thanks very much for being with us again this month.
Thanks, Dave.
This has been the Chancellor's Report on WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Dave Edwards. Thanks for listening.